WMNF.org. All right, I'm Duncan Strauss. Really delighted to bring you another edition of Talking Animals, in which we'll be speaking with the Humane Society of the United States President and CEO, Wayne Pacelli, about his new book, The Bond, Our Kinship with Animals, Our Call to Defend Them. First, though, as always, we're kicking off the show with an animal, Tim. This is Jeff Beck doing Les Paul with Tiger Rag here on Talking Animals. Jeff Beck, who rolls into town for shows at Ruth Eckert Hall Friday and Saturday with his version of Tiger Rag, an animal song of sorts. He's in today's edition of Talking Animals. My name's Duncan Strauss, here with our program that is devoted to all subjects in the animal kingdom. In just a few minutes, we'll be speaking with today's guest, Wayne Pacelli, the president and CEO of the Humane Society of the United States. HSUS, country's largest animal protection organization with the upwards of 11 million members. He's written a new book, The Bond, Our Kinship with Animals, Our Call to Defend Them. So we'll obviously talk about that as well as various animal welfare issues and how HSUS seeks to tackle them. Perhaps some HSUS policies and decisions that have spurred serious discussion, if not controversy. All that and more when we speak with Wayne Pacelli in a few moments here on Talking Animals. And as usual, we'll welcome your questions and comments at 813-239-9663 or by email at dj@wmnf.org. Also, a bit later in the show, we'll step into the comedy corner, play Name That Animal Tune. The winner will receive a copy of Wayne's new book, The Bond. And we'll speak with Yvonne Guibert, proprietor of Groovy Cats and Dogs, who's organizing a natural pet wellness expo this Saturday. Right now, though, it's time for our animal news and announcements segment to look at items of interest in animal news as well as announcements of local events. So let's turn now to interesting and or notable developments in animal news. We'll also welcome your comments, which you can share on the air instantly by calling 813-239-9663 or emailing dj@wmnf.org. So, let's talk turkey, as it were, produced as always by the Talking Animals award-winning Rip and Read News Department. Our first item comes from the New York Times, published over the weekend, written by Don Van Atta. Headline, The Governor Likes Alligators in Only One Size. A little glimpse into Governor Rick Scott, and starts off, the piece does, saying he's praising Florida's many outdoor pleasures, fishing, hunting, birdwatching, when he let slip he did not have much fondness for alligators. Quote, "I don't want to be close to them that much," Mr. Scott said during a recent visit to the Florida Fish and Wildlife Conservation Commission. In fact, he said he would be, quote unquote, receptive to putting a bullet in a gator if someone believed that it might help promote the state's tourism. Well, it goes on from there. Short piece, short but well done, of course. And the last portion of it says, "A few skittish visitors were not sure if he was smart to stand 10 yards from a big gator. Now we're in a scene where there's a gator nearby in the so-called movie dome at the park. And don't worry, you're not really in danger," the park ranger assured them. "Gators don't like to use a lot of energy." That might be news, the piece concludes, to Mr. Scott, who gets close to a gator only when he slips on gold-embossed, custom-made governor boots made of alligator skin. I want to remind you that friends at the Animal Coalition of Tampa are presenting their first annual Kids for Paws contest. So kids 6 to 13 years can participate in this and basically register online through Animal Coalition of Tampa. The website is actampa.org. And the kids create a free fundraising page. Then they send the page to their friends and family and ask them to sponsor them through donation. And all kinds of cool things happen for the organizations, the kids, and, of course, the proceeds directly benefit the ACT spay-neuter clinic. So, anyways, this is all going on throughout the month of May, and prizes will be awarded at an event on June 4. So find out more about that by going to their website, and great to get kids involved early on in this kind of thing. Oh, maybe something we'll talk about with Wayne Pacelli a bit later. And over on my side of the state, I was disturbed to see this, but this is the kind of thing that, again, need to talk about now and again, or at least make sure people are aware of. From the Palm Beach Post, it says a puppy dealer exposed in a December Palm Beach Post series as an importer of out-of-state dogs was charged last week with 23 animal cruelty counts after authorities discovered a dozen feces-caked and flea-infested dogs in his Boynton Beach garage in February. A city animal control officer responded to an anonymous complaint, contacted Kenneth Johnson, who rented the home. After hearing dogs barking in a barely ventilated garage, Johnson lied repeatedly to the officer. The officer wrote in an arrest report telling her there were only three dogs in the garage and that he was in Miami, could not let her see the dogs until the following day. He was actually in the home's driveway. And they finally got in there, and the garage was swarming with flies, stinking of feces, contained 12 dogs. And anyway, it goes on from there. But anytime you talk about more legislation, more ways to enforce those laws, I think these are the kinds of examples people really are thinking about and pointing to. And let's see, also coming up sort of loosely in the area on Sarasota Bradenton's Canine Companions are going to make it a dog day afternoon on Saturday, May 14th, noon to 4 p.m. at a fun-packed, family-friendly adopt-a-thon that will benefit local animal groups taking place at Gethel Toyota. I may have mispronounced that, sorry. And anyway, so there's all kinds of things going on, pet portraits, mini obedience training session, doggy costume contest, and more. So you can at least email. It didn't seem to be a website here for some reason, unless I'm missing it, but you can email info@sarasotadog.com, and they can give you more details if you'd like to be involved in one capacity or another. All right, so I think that's going to be it for the moment. Let's now step into the Talking Animals Comedy Corner, which involves animal-oriented comedy. This is Jackie Cation with a hunk of a piece called Animals on today's Comedy Corner on Talking Animals.
And, but get this, when I was a kid, of course, If you had an old dog or a very ill cat, you sadly put the dog down, put the cat to sleep. It was very sad. But they would go to Happy Dog or Cat Heaven, and you would go to the pound to get a new... And it's a circle of life. It was very beautiful. That doesn't happen in crazy Los Angeles land, where people are like, oh no, the cat's only 17, we're going to get dialysis. Are you? I have a friend of mine who has a cat that is 21 years old, and in addition to the plethora of other issues going on with this cat, it now has diabetes. And so she has to shoot it up twice a day. You know what that is? Time for a new cat. New cat twice a day? Why do you get a cat? So you don't have to do anything. That's why you get a cat. Because it poops in a box. $3,000 for diabetic cat medicine for this cat. You know what that is? That is 3,000 new cats. Because cats are free. And I have another friend of mine who has a dog, and the dog has to get a new hip, but it didn't work, and so the dog is still scooting around on a cart like Captain Pike. And I'm going to tell you something. It is a dog. It is not ever going to be Stephen Hawking. Not ever. It's not going to write the great American novel from the cart. It's not going to cure cancer from the cart. If it can't run, new dog. New dog! And people get mad at me in L.A., and they come up to me after shows, and they're like, you don't like animals. And I said, no, I don't like you. Because you're a jackass about your pet. You got to let go, weirdo. And because what do you get with a cat or a dog? 15, 20 years. That's what you get. I didn't make that rule. If you would like more than that, turtle, 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 turtle. Tiny turtle, hat, tutu, carried around your creepy Paris Hilton purse. Can lift its head up. Adorable. Giant tortoise that could walk slowly around your backyard for 300 years and become a burden on your descendants. Turtle. Where I go to eat breakfast in LA, right next to my breakfast place, there is an animal eye care clinic. Kid you not. Animal eye care clinic. I don't have insurance, but let's get bitten some contacts. Better now or now? Now.
All right, that was Jackie Cation with the bulk of a piece called Animals, taken from her album It's Never Gonna Be Bred. I'm Duncan Strauss. This is Talking Animals. Our website is talkinganimals.net. It's nearly time to speak with today's guest, Wayne Pacelli. As I mentioned earlier in the show, Wayne is the president and CEO of the Humane Society of the United States, HSUS, the country's largest animal protection organization with upwards of 11 million members and counting. He's written a new book, The Bond, Our Kinship with Animals, Our Call to Defend Them, and is in the midst of a book tour that includes stops at the Books a Million in Palm Harbor on Saturday and the Barnes & Noble in Sarasota on Sunday. So we have so much to discuss with Wayne. It feels like we're already running behind, but with a reminder that we invite you to join the conversation by calling 813-239-9663 or emailing us at dj@wmnf.org. Let's welcome Wayne Pacelli back, actually, to Talking Animals. Good afternoon and good morning, Wayne.
Thank you for having me on.
Absolutely, and I gather you're just actually sort of down the road a piece in Orlando, right?
Here in sunny Florida.
Yeah, well, all right. This makes it all the most cozy, almost in the studio with us. So anyway, first of all, congratulations on the book. I mean, geez, other than this amazing blurb from your colleague Jane Goodall and sitting on the upper reaches of some prominent bestseller lists and generating some enthusiastic reviews, seems like saying it's a bit of a stiff, really, but so far so good. When you pick up The Bond, you get actually a lot of pages and arguably sort of a few books. I mean, it seems sort of a bit of a historical guide, a bit of memoir, a bit of a sort of a journalistic examination of recent findings and legislative breakthroughs, a bit of a position paper, and then at times sort of a bit of a spanking of some organizations that have various acronyms. So, anyone who knows much about you knows you're an inveterate blogger, but I guess one place to start is, you know, what were your chief motivations in writing this book, and what all will it accomplish if it meets your highest expectations?
Well, Duncan, I'm on a 75-city book tour, and one of the reasons I wrote this book was to elevate the national discussion about animals and our responsibilities to animals. And I wrote it, I think your description of it was very good. I mean, it is part memoir, it's part manifesto, it's part, blueprint for the future. it captures a lot of my experiences and my travels. I take the reader, you know, up to the ice floes of Canada. I take him or her to Yellowstone National Park as bison are being kind of herded out of the park to be shot. I take reader to slaughterhouses, and you know, at some level, you know, that might seem daunting, and I think, oh my God, you know, I don't want to read another book about animal cruelty, but I hope that the whole thing is uplifting, because I really talk about some amazing people. I have some great characters in the book, and I think the whole thing is kind of a meditation on how we should reorder our relationship with animals and move away from one grounded on exploitation and harm and move toward compassion and decency and mercy. And I think we've got a bond that's built into every one of us. That's the name of the book, is The Bond. And I really zero in on this because I think it gives us a head start in doing the right thing for a fellow creature. You know, we've got a natural kinship and the right inclination, but it then requires that we act upon that and nourish it and not overtake it with some other selfish concern.
Yeah, well, I certainly want to delve into that and some things that sometimes block people or on a larger scale organizations from doing those or heeding those kind of built-in instincts. But as you mentioned, I mean, you know, this seems like a grueling book tour, and so it kind of feels like there would be at least one or more sort of notable gambits beyond peddling books and even beyond, like you say, kind of, you know, encouraging that sort of dialogue. I mean, it does seem like, I would think at least that you're hoping through all these sorts of things, the stops at the book stores, interviews like these, others, that you can hopefully preach beyond the choir.
Without any question. I mean, I really do think that it's a book for people who are involved and who already care, and I hope it deepens their involvement. I hope it contextualizes their own kind of compassion for animals. I hope it makes them more effective. But it is also for those who are uninitiated, people who have this good instinct toward animals but are unaware of what's going on to some degree, and who really may want their own sort of instructions and guidance on what to do to, you know, become more of an advocate and to influence the way animals are treated throughout society.
And that, you know, that kind of to me raises an interesting point because, well, let me actually ask this the other way around, which is, you know, asking you if you sort of feel like we're on the cusp of some sort of, I don't know, seismic shift maybe in animal welfare and the humane movement. Because, I mean, different sections of your book collectively, to me, suggest the formation of sort of an imperfect storm. I mean, on the one hand, as you just said, hopefully the book and the tour and some of the media things that come from that will reach people who aren't already, you know, thinking this way. And they're already, as you, I think, at different times in your book point out, there perhaps are the most people right now dedicated to trying to end abuse, cruelty, exploitation. But at the same time, reading throughout the book, and if you know much otherwise, there's also the most widespread instances of those things, which to me, this seems like we're heading for some sort of collision.
Well, really well said, and that is a thesis in the book, is, you know, we have more groups and more passion for animals than ever. We have more understanding of animals. We actually have, you know, a pretty strong legal framework that we're beginning to build in society to protect animals. But we also do have cruelty on a vast scale with normalized or systemic cruelty, whether it's factory farms or the use of animals in laboratories. I mean, issues that are not new to anyone who follows these subjects, but I think when you kind of pull it all together and you look at this kind of contrasting picture of our society with so much good and so many positive actions toward animals, yet also, I mean, just massive, massive cruelty. And what sort of schizophrenia are we engaging in as a society to have these two kind of conflicting notions? at work every day in our lives in so many institutions in our country and in the world.
Yeah. Well, that's, you know, I mean, there's a lot of stuff, you know, that sort of helps, I think, answer that in the book. And again, as you already noted, you know, ways that people can get involved, ways they can get more involved. And again, you know, one of the things that I think HSUS is sort of known for, and you certainly spent some time, obviously, in the book on, is tackling a lot of these things at the legislative level. You hear time and time again of people that care about animals and animal welfare, people on the show, just people out there, you know, helping, trapping feral cats, working at shelters, whatever they do, just saying, well, how come there isn't better laws or how come there isn't any law in this case? And, it just seems like that's an ongoing focus of HSUS to try to address where there are those gaps. But again, up against a lot of machinery in many cases.
Well, without any question. And, you know, I think that a lot of the focus of animal advocates for the past 140 or 50 years as this cause has been around has been to rescue animals in crisis, to provide shelter to homeless animals, to provide some, you know, treatment to the injured. But we've got to get on the front end of this. We've got to reach animals before they're the victims of cruelty. We've got to prevent cruelty. In fact, prevention of cruelty is captured in the names of many different organizations devoted in this field. And one of the ways you do that is by setting up a legal framework that basically guides society, provides a moral standard, and a prescription on conducting ourselves in a way that results in cruelty. And if people do choose to violate that standard, then they get, you know, penalized by the state. I mean, this is something that's so critical to me, and it was so natural to me in thinking about, you know, being an advocate for animals. We've got to do more on the front end, and
yeah.
There is a burgeoning political movement for animals, and a coincident effort to enforce those laws, and it's such a long overdue aspect of our cause.
Well, let me let folks know, this is Talking Animals. If you just tuned in, we're speaking with Wayne Pacelli, the president and CEO of the Humane Society of the U.S., whose new book is The Bond, Our Kinship with Animals, Our Call to Defend Them. If you'd like to join the conversation, ask Wayne a question or offer a comment, please call 813-239-9663 or email us at dj@wmnf.org. And, Wayne, and sort of, you know, the one thing about getting out in front of it is sometimes you have to get out in front of you know, some other, like, well, let's just say kooky legislative turns by someone who's got the opposite sort of idea in mind. For example, I'm thinking of our local friend here, Jim Norman, you know, fairly recent development on the sort of nuttier legislation side was this bill that he had introduced, and obviously he overreached, I think, with the first version. Of course, for people listening who might not be familiar, I'm talking about this bill where he was going to prevent people from taking any sort of pictures or footage of any farm even passing by. So he did scale it back, but he still managed to pass a version of this thing. And there's some sort of counterpart, of course, still pending in Iowa, if I'm not mistaken. I mean, you know, is that the kind of thing that you know, the HSUS has to kind of also spend time on to sort of knock down while, you know, preferring, obviously, to, you know, put in new legislation, but you've got to, like, keep these things at bay as well?
Well, this is a reaction to our success that essentially agribusiness, which, you know, is part of its normal operations, raises animals in giant warehouses and then crams them in cages and crates within those warehouses, and it's a major problem of animal welfare. And they're concerned that the images that people are seeing of these farms that are often obtained by undercover investigators at the Humane Society or with other animal welfare groups are shocking to a national population that believes that someone is kind of watching the barnyard, and whether it's industry or the government, that there really are some standards in place. And when they see that things have gotten so bad, that the animals are in such extreme confinement, and they're often, you know, kept in ways that are just at odds with anyone's basic notion of how a fellow creature should be treated, people, you know, are angry. so the response from lawmakers aligned with the agribusiness industry is not to kind of demand stronger standards for the care of the animals, but to say, hey, we're going to close the curtain and we're going to criminalize taking pictures or videos of animals on farms. I mean, as you said, it's an outrageous overreach, but it is a big, big issue. And the legislation has been scaled back in the states, but it's still really, really destructive. And we're working hard to defeat those bills.
Yeah, no doubt. Well, not surprisingly, Wayne, we've got more than a few folks who have written in emails and they're on the phone. So let's at least try to take one or two as we continue our conversation as well. Hi, you're on Talking Animals with Wayne Pacelli.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi, my name's Peggy.
Hi, Peggy.
We're in Florida here, and I'm listening to everything you're saying, and it all applies to our greyhound problem, greyhound racing.
Okay.
And from what I understand, there's a Senate bill and a House bill right now on the verge of passing to decouple the racing. That doesn't mean stop it. That means to let the racetracks decide if they want to continue racing. I'm just wondering what the Humane Society, I'd heard that your name brought up, as far as the animals that will be left more or less marooned. They won't be working athletes. I think everybody in Florida is aware that what the normal course was for them. I'm just wondering if Humane Society has any plans, I've looked on your site, as far as the help for these animals.
So in other words, Peggy, if the bill goes through and this is decoupled, that you're wondering what the Humane Society, for example, would do to help those dogs who are not racing any longer.
That's correct.
Okay.
Yeah. And just to be clear for listeners, decoupling essentially is a reaction to the effort by the state to require that if there are going to be card rooms or other forms of casino-style gambling at the 13 or so Florida Greyhound racing tracks, that they have to have live racing that occurs at the same time. So it essentially obligates these facilities to have greyhounds and have racing when essentially it's a dying pastime. I mean, there are very few people interested in watching greyhound racing. And the whole thing is essentially a subsidized operation. So we at HSUS actively support this decoupling legislation. We don't think the greyhound industry should be subsidized in this way. We don't think that there should be an obligation by these independent businesses to conduct some aspect of an operation that they don't want to do. I mean, like requiring any other business to do something that they don't want to do. I mean, it's just too heavy a hand. And I think that it's the right policy for Florida. I mean, this enterprise of greyhound racing has been controversial for a long time. There have been a lot of concerns about what happens to the dogs at the track, how they're cared for, and then their disposition once they're no longer needed. So I'm afraid that, you know, we don't have a lot of great outcomes for dogs consistently from greyhound tracks. I mean, the adoption programs have been stepped up, and that's important. But yes, if tracks shut down, we will certainly work with greyhound advocacy organizations and try to see that all those animals are placed into loving homes.
Thank you, Peggy, for your question. Okay, Wayne, there's other callers and emailers, but I guess this is probably as good a time as any to address the elephant on the phone, elephant on the radio waves, whatever. When we spoke in September of 2009, we discussed what was then sort of your recent decision to enlist Michael Vick in HSUS's ongoing campaign against dogfighting. And in our chat, you anticipated it would be divisive decision, and outlined how making that kind of decision really spoke to the intricacies and challenges of leadership at that level. And you obviously spent a good deal of time on it in the book. I mean, what is your thought today, May 4th, 2011, on the issue? I mean, to me, just hosting the show alone, it seems like one of the most polarizing issues in the animal world in recent memory. I mean, I take calls, but more to the point, I'll have guests on. We're not talking about anything related to Vic or even dogfighting. And next thing you know, people are going berserk about Michael Vick. So, you know, just feels like it's really, really emotionally charged even now. And I'd love to see how you look at your decision at this point compared to when we spoke about it in 2009 or when you first made the decision.
Yeah. Well, you know, the decision is a complex one. And of course, you know, anyone who knows anything about HSUS knows that, you know, we have a really strong anti-dog fighting and anti-animal fighting program. I mean, the strongest in the nation by a long shot. We, you know, have tip lines, reward programs. We have changed the legal framework for animal fighting in this country. We have community-based programs that do outreach to at-risk kids. Michael Vick would have never been prosecuted but for the legal framework that we helped to set up and to elevate the issue nationally. We'd been banging the drum on dogfighting for many years before the Michael Vick case came to light. And the things that Michael Vick did are the same things that dogfighters all across the country do. So we said that, you know, he had to be prosecuted, and it was the right only thing to do, that justice needed to be served, that no person is above the law. It was a crucial test for our animal cruelty laws in the nation, and we passed. But Vic obviously wanted to redeem himself, and he knew, I'm sure, that he had to show that he was a changed person. And he reached out to me through some of his intermediaries and said he wanted to get involved. And, you know, I initially said no. And I just thought that he was too radioactive, too difficult, and I'm sure had the same reaction to just about every other person who cares about dogs and other animals. But then, after some weeks passed, I had a nagging feeling that that wasn't the right instinct, and that we're really about change. We're about people making improvements in their lives and doing the right thing where they used to do the wrong thing. And that's, frankly, the circumstance for so many of us animal advocates. Many of us made the wrong decisions, maybe not so direct and intimate and vicious as what Vic did, but nonetheless the wrong moral decisions. And we try to leave those bad decisions behind and reach a higher plane. And the other aspect of this for me was very practical. You know, we have been fighting dog fighting. We know what the problems are, and the biggest problem is urban-based dogfighting with young African-American men and boys in urban communities who are getting dogs for the wrong reasons and then screwing them up in fights. But I felt that Vic, if he really, you know, was committed to this, could be a really important ambassador to reach populations that we're not really having a conversation with. So Vic is stuck with the program, and it's been 18 or 19 months. He's been doing visits to schools and churches all over the East, and we've had great results, and it's been very exciting, and it may be polarizing to some, but when I talk about it on the road and explain the decision to people, people who care about animals get it, because endlessly flogging Michael Vick doesn't do one thing to help animals, but putting him to work and using his story as a cautionary tale to warn kids away from dog fighting certainly does a lot of positive things.
So I think based on especially your last comment or two, this is probably pretty squarely in the rhetorical question camp. But so there's, looking back, there's nothing probably, I'm guessing, that you would do differently or any aspect of your decision that you would alter if you could just, you know, go back and do some of it again?
No, I mean, and it's not just a stubborn, you know, refusal to, you know, to question what I've done in the past. I mean, I've made mistakes on a number of issues in the past, but I don't think this was a mistake. I mean, this was an embrace of change.
Mm-hmm.
This was a, you know, adding a new tool to the toolkit to end dogfighting in America. And I still don't quite understand the argument on why not to encourage this guy to speak out against dogfighting and to use his prominent voice in society, especially with certain populations that have been traditionally difficult to reach, and not encourage that. I don't quite understand the argument, other than just an emotional sort of intense hatred of what he did, which I share.
Yeah,
I just don't think there's a strategic argument not to do it.
Yeah, no, I think, and then we can move on. I know there's a few other folks on the phone. We're running short on time here. But, yeah, I think, you know, and in your book, I mean, I think you have the kind of access and did have the kind of access to Michael Vick that most of us don't. So I think partially, at least in answer to your question, like you don't quite understand the resistance or even why it's as polarizing as it is. I think for a lot of people, it's, you know, yeah, it is slightly or more than slightly emotional. Like, hey, here's the litany of things that this guy did to dogs, and it's pretty hard to get past that. I think also people, and you might have a different experience, but I think a lot of people don't really feel like he ever really apologized or showed any real sincere remorse. So, yeah, because like you say, the animal world is littered with tales of redemption, and we've all, you know, overcome things or learned things or made mistakes, usually innocently. But I think in this case, for a lot of people, that doesn't seem to apply to Vic, because they're not really sure that he is sorry, that he did have remorse, that he is, yeah, he's helping HSUS and with that campaign, but he's also really helping Michael Vick. And, you know, anyway, I think it's still kind of a little gray for a huge faction of folks.
Yeah, it may be. And, you know, my own view is that time will tell. Mm-hmm. And the other aspect of this for me was that if Vic is not someone who's committed to this, and if it is completely insincere, then that will show over time, and that will be an embarrassment to him. It won't be an embarrassment to me. I mean, my views are clear on
yes.
the issue, and I'm ruthlessly pragmatic in wanting to protect pit bulls and to stop dogfighting, and I'm willing to try things that are a little bit out of the box, because the crisis is that bad.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I don't think that we have the luxury of turning down opportunities to have this sort of engagement and discussion on dogfighting in America.
Yeah.
And let's face it, I mean, we pushed the Vic process into an amazing series of new laws. I mean, 30 new state laws were enacted as a consequence of the Vic case. I mean, it was one of those wake-up moments in the American consciousness. And it wasn't just about flogging Vic then. It was about recognizing that Vic is one of many, many thousands of people involved in this activity, and we need standards in society, and we need laws, and we need felony laws. And then I thought, well, you know, why stop at the lawmaking side? Why don't we use this as a cultural influencer? Just the way rap music was glamorizing tough-looking pit bulls, and you know, those influences had an enormous impact on street culture in America, and it led to the rise in dogfighting. Well, let's use Vic as an antidote to that and have a conversation that we've never had. So
yeah.
I think it's very clear, but you know, I know that there are, you know, wonderful people of deep compassion who still are very skeptical.
Right, and I think, you know, in fairness all the way around, that the emotion has run so high that there's probably a lot of people that haven't even absorbed the fact that all those laws have been passed in the wake of this. So,
right.
You know, so the emotionalism, you know, and sort of what goes with that cuts both ways, as it often does. But, let me try Wayne. I know we're sort of just in the last minute or two here, and some people have been on the phone for like a long time hoping to talk to you. So let's put one on the air. Hi, you're on Talking Animals with, Wayne Pacelli. Hi, you're on Talking Animals with Wayne Pacelli.
Yeah, this is, Frank from Tampa.
Hi, Frank.
Listen, I want to preface my statement opening with, did I write my senators local and federal and, you know, and I try to rescue a lot of feral cats to have them fixed. And we run into a lot of problems with no help financially, and we become feeling disenfranchised with the whole system, you know, trying to help but running into constant roadblocks. You know, is there any hope with the Humane Society as far as that goes?
In terms of funding with feral cat programs?
Yeah, I work in shopping centers, and I collect, you know, I could collect 100 cats a day. I spend myself personally out of my own pocket close to $3,800 last year having them fixed. And I just can't afford it. And like I said, you can't get no help nowhere, and you become feeling disenfranchised.
Yeah, well, I hear you. And, I mean, it's obviously an incredible commitment that you've made, and it's self-sacrificing. And, you know, in my book, I send a major shout-out to the feral cat people in this country who are doing such extraordinary work. You know, the fact is, Frank, there is a huge amount of volunteerism, and there is a huge amount of personal spending that people do to help animals. And, you know, we're spending upwards of a couple $1 billion a year as a nation trying to rescue animals and spay neuter them and the like. And HSUS, you know, just can't do that for every community. I mean, there are local groups and networks. We do a huge amount of animal rescue. We know that there is infinitely more to be done. But we try to make sure that we reserve, you know, some of our finite resources to do some of that prevention work. And I hope you don't feel that, you know, you're not getting the support from your friends within the field. I think it's just that everybody's kind of, you know, manning his or her parapet, and, you know, we're doing all that we can individually.
Yeah, and, I understand that. I have one further question for you, though.
Okay, very, very brief, Frank, because we're desperately out of time now. So.
I'd just like to know, you know, you wrote the book, and how much of the profits has gone back to the Humane Society?
Well, I wrote the book, Frank, just to be clear, on my own time, and no HSUS assets, you know, were used in writing the book, and got an independent publisher that's paying for the book, printing, and all that. But about half the proceeds do go to the Humane Society.
All right, that's all I needed. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
Okay, thanks, Frank. Quickly, let's see. I'm going to at least try to read one of the email here. A huge fan of the work you do and looking forward to reading the bond. As you know, animal shelters are hugely overwhelmed. What does HSUS do to assist animal shelters?
Well, I'm here right now in Orlando because we've got Animal Care Expo, which is the largest trade show and conference for animals in the country, and it attracts sheltering professionals from across the nation. And this conference is an incredible educational opportunity and training opportunity for sheltering professionals. We do publish the magazine for the field called Animal Sheltering, and we provide a number of other services and functions to the animal sheltering community. We don't fund all of them. We do give out some grants to shelters throughout the country. But really, our biggest purpose in this realm of our work is to professionalize the entire field.
Cool. Well, thanks. Thanks for that question. And Wayne, thank you. And I just quickly want to add, there's so many other things I was hoping to get to, but I also want to be sure to include some of our listeners in this conversation. So one thing is that I want to call attention to is the HSUS conference every summer called Taking Action for Animals, held in Washington, D.C., usually mid-July. And there, you know, there's a lot of animal-oriented conferences, various stripes throughout the year, but this one I think is singular for a couple reasons. There's the lobby day, element where, you know, people that come to that get set up with their legislators, and then after the conference as part of the training, they go and have meetings with their legislators. So again, the idea of like reaching at a very legislative level ways to improve things and enact laws and lobby people. So I think that's great. And the other thing, which I mentioned earlier in the show, even before you joined us, Wayne, is I always think anything that spurs participation by kids on any of this kind of work is so great. And so another part of this this conference is the Student Summit, which is designed to get kids as young as, 13, I think, up to, like, in their college-age kids to be exposed to this kind of stuff and learn some things about advocacy.
Yes. I mean, the youth engagement programs are critical because that investment is going to pay dividends for decades.
Yeah, so it's really wonderful, and so anyway, I've been there a couple of years, and I learn a lot. I troll, of course, for guests there, but I also learn a lot, and anybody would be well advised if they have the time and opportunity to get over there to check that out. So again, our guest has been Wayne Pacelli. His new book is The Bond, Our Kinship with Animals, Our Call to Defend Them. He'll be doing some book signings, things locally, Books a Million in Palm Harbor on Saturday, May 7th, this Saturday at 4 p.m., and Barnes and Noble in Sarasota this Sunday, May 8th at 2 p.m., And there's all kinds of more information, just all the things we talked about and more, humanesociety.org. Wayne Pacelli, thanks again for joining us today on Talking Animals.
Hey, thank you so much. You're a great host.
Thanks, Ron. Bye-bye. Okay, we have, you are listening to Talking Animals, where the show website is talkinganimals.net. It's time to see the name of that animal tune. There'll be a prize, a copy of Wayne Pacelli's new book, The Bond, to the first person who calls 813-239-9663 and correctly identifies this animal tune. We're going to make it kind of interesting, you know, a little trickier. It's a kind of a cool big book, and, you know, you got to earn it. So it's Name That Animal Tune on Talking Animals, and then we'll come right back with our guest, Yvonne Guibert, after that. All right, it's Talking Animals. Name That Animal Tune. Can you name that animal tune? We're going to take it off the air if you can. So right now I want to introduce Yvonne Guibert, a proprietor of Groovy Cats and Dogs, who's organizing and hosting a natural pet wellness expo this Saturday. Yvonne, welcome to Talking Animals.
Thank you, Duncan. Good to be here.
Okay, cool. So let's start off just briefly. So what exactly is Groovy Cats and Dogs besides something with a groovy name?
We refer to ourselves as a health food store for pets, just like an Abbey's or a Whole Foods for people. So that's how we refer to ourselves, a health food store where you can buy healthy, natural foods and treats for your pets.
Cool. And sort of trying to steer clear of any, you know, commercial-sounding statements, maybe you could sort of describe the pros and cons briefly of mass-marketed pet food, let's say, given – or in contrast to the food that you know you and others advocate and advocate and actually sell.
Sure. Well, not to get into all the details because there are a lot, but and without overgeneralizing, there are certainly some great products out there that are mass marketed. But the biggest problem with most mass marketed foods of any kind is that there's marketing behind it, which means there's lots of trendy advertising and packaging that leads the consumer to believe that they're buying a really healthy premium product, when in reality it's full of inferior ingredients, byproducts, corn, wheat, you know, things that aren't really all that healthy for dogs or cats.
Okay. So kind of moving our focus to this Saturday's big event, what are the key details of the Natural Pet Wellness Expo that you're holding?
Well, as indicated by the name, it's all about wellness. So it's just an event that we've put together. We pull from a lot of local resources, local veterinarians, other pet experts, and it's just a lot of different people pulled together, a lot like you would see at some of our local pet events in the area.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they just come together and they're available to answer questions. We're having a few talks on specific topics to address some topics that we hear a lot about in the store. And then it's a time for people to bring their pets out, hopefully do some socializing with their dogs, which is always healthy.
Sure.
Get some goodies and
great.
Get some exposure to some neat things.
And what would be one or two of the topics of the talks? I think that's always important for folks, especially coming to something like that, to just
right.
Sort of know what they would expect to hear.
All right. Well, Saturday we have Dr. Linda Register, and she's going to be talking about vaccination protocols.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of controversy and question about, you know, do we really need to vaccinate our pets every year? Are all the vaccinations they're receiving essential? So she's going to talk about which ones are essential and which ones we can get by with every 3 to 5 years, things like that. And, you know, do we really need to be vaccinating our pets as much as we do?
Great. And I know we can't really talk on WNF about the price of things, but I believe it's fairly reasonably priced to attend this. And yet at the same time, if some folks attending do donate, who would receive whatever proceeds are generated in that manner?
Well, anything we ever do here at Groovy is to help support a local rescue group. So this Saturday, our featured rescue group is St. Francis Society Animal Rescue.
Great. Great, great. Well, Yvonne, if people want to find out more about this and get some details, is there a website or is there a phone number that we could offer them to follow up on that?
Sure. They can go to Groovy Cats and Dogs website and click on events. It's groovycats.com.
Okay.
Like it sounds.
Great.
Or they could call the store, 813-265-1333. And they can talk to one of the staff about the details.
Great. Well, this sounds really, really cool, and wish you luck on it. And thanks so much for joining us today on Talking Animals. Again, this has been Yvonne Guibert, and it's Groovy Cats and Dogs, and it's the Natural Pet Wellness Expo. Again, the website for that is groovycatsanddogs.com. Yvonne, thanks so much for joining us on Talking Animals.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
Absolutely.
All right.
Okay, bye. Thanks. All right. We have just about reached the end of today's edition of Talking Animals. And we'll be back next Wednesday, May 11th, when our guest will be Mark Kurlansky, New York Times bestselling author of Cod, a biography of the fish that changed the world, and other books, who's just published a new book, World Without Fish. It's next Wednesday, May 11th, on Talking Animals at 11 a.m. I hope you'll join me then. I also hope you'll visit our website, talkinganimals.net, where we make available all sorts of information, as well as archives and podcasts of past Talking Animals programs. We also have a link to the Talking Animals Facebook page, our Twitter feed, and more. That's all found at talkinganimals.net. Talking Animals broadcast outreach consultant is Libby McKenna. My thanks to her. I'm Duncan Strauss. Thanks very much for listening. Have a good week. Be kind to animals. Be kind to others. Be kind to yourself. Stay tuned for the fabulous Scott Elliott with the All Souls version of It's the Music, airing next from noon to 3. Hey, as you probably know, Sunday is Mother's Day. So if your mom is around, see her, call her, send her something. If she's gone, remember her in whatever way works best for you. I'll ask my mom many years ago, but I still think about her all the time. Extraordinary woman, taught me all about compassion, to love and care for animals, a zillion other important things. So happy Mother's Day to all moms out there. And we're closing out today's show, as always, with an animal tune. This one from Cracker, who will be headlining WMNF's 30th Tropical Heat Wave, May 14th, in and around Ybor City. I have my ticket now. Do you? Go to WNF.org or call Miss Julie here at the station, but get your tickets to Heat Wave now. So again, this is Cracker with Guarded by Monkeys, taking us up to the NPR News, and then Scott Elliott and his great, great show right here on WMNF Tampa. We'll see you next Wednesday, 11 a.m. on Talking Animals. Thanks for listening.